pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts and the actions of all our lives be acceptable to you, O Lord. Amen. Ralph Waldo Emerson, in the 19th century poet, once wrote, "Hitch your wagon to a star." This was his advice on how to become successful in life. Just follow your star. But I believe it depends on the star that you follow. There's no shortage of stars to follow in this day and age, each offering its own kind of hope and salvation, each alluring in their twinkling possibilities. Some stars shine brightly at first, but when we follow them, we may discover that the path may not lead to life. So today we begin our worship series, Who Are You? And as we begin this new year, there's many things that try to define who we are. In the new year, we make resolutions to sometimes change, make changes in our lives so that we be more like the people that we want to be. But the question of identity is always at the center of it. Who are you? Our scripture today reminds us that who we are is related to what or who we follow. Our traditional depictions of nativity have us putting the wise men at the manger on that holy evening. According to our Christian calendar, we celebrate the arrival of the wise men or the magi on Epiphany, 12 days after Christmas. Today we are celebrating Epiphany Sunday. And an epiphany is a divine manifestation. It's a revelation or insight. It's kind of like an aha moment when the light bulb comes on and we understand and things become, we get it now, right? And so that's what the epiphany is for Jesus. We get it. He's the king, right? And so the story of the wise man, as it introduces us to the season of Epiphany, invites us also to check our bearings, to consider our journey toward Christ in our lives. When we look at the biblical account, we actually discover that the wise men didn't actually appear on that holy night, but actually it was more likely probably to be about 2 years after Jesus' birth. And they found Jesus in a home, not at the manger. Our traditional depictions of these travelers from afar have also led us to make many assumptions about who they are. First, we often refer to them as kings, which is probably not quite accurate, although they most likely were advisors in the royal court. To call them wise was probably fair, as these men were astrologers. They would have been considered priests of another religion, something like Zoroastrian is what it would have been. They were alchemists, which was an early version of chemistry. And they would have known, if you mix this chemical with this chemical, then you get this explosion, or this chemical and this chemical, you get this reaction. And so from the word magi, we get the word magic or magician, because in those days, simple chemistry was viewed as magic. And we have often referred to them as, the three wise men, but we actually don't know how many actually came. All we know for sure is they brought with them three gifts on the long journey from the east, most likely from Persia, Babylon, modern-day Iraq or Iran. What we often lose sight of by placing the wise men at the manger scene is their dedication and their commitment. The Magi are an inspiring example of persistence. They traveled on such a long distance on their quest following a star. And there's some lessons we can learn from the Magi as we seek to follow our star today. First, they were willing to set out on the journey. They were not content with merely admiring the star in the sky, with being stargazers. But they were willing to actually follow the star. They set out at once to find the newborn king of whose coming the star was a signal. We have to remember that there is indeed a difference between being a fan of Jesus, an admirer of Jesus, and actually being a follower of Jesus. Kyle Eidemann, in his book, Not a Fan, wrote, "The biggest threat to the church today is fans who call themselves Christians, but are actually interested in following Christ. They want to be close enough to Jesus to get all the benefits, but not so close that it requires anything from them." The difference between being a fan and being a follower. So we must be willing to actually set out and to follow Jesus. Next, the wise men made a journey of faith. What would prompt someone to leave the comfort and security of their homes to go on such a journey, not knowing where they would end up? The wise men set out on a journey of faith to find their king that they believed had been born. And these men were willing to give up everything to find him. And the journey itself is important. You know, we can know all the facts about Jesus. We can know the Gospels by heart. But like the wise men, we need to come and see for ourselves, to bow down in adoration offer ourselves to him. All of life is a journey, a continuous pilgrimage, growing in our faith and learning more and deepening our spirituality, our knowledge and understanding of God. It's a journey. It's also a journey of risk. The amount of energy and expense of their journey would have been great. They were willing to put what they had on the line. We usually picture the three wise men traveling by themselves, but scholars believe that more likely they would have had an entire entourage traveling with them, perhaps even 50 to 100 people. It wasn't an easy journey either. Traveling was extremely difficult in those days. There were hostile tribes to avoid, broad rivers and deserts to cross. And so they would need a fairly large caravan to be able to travel safely and have the needed things that they for that long journey. And so it was dangerous for the wise men 2,000 years ago as they traveled. The Christian faith is still a journey that involves risk. The wise men were committed, but they did not know where the journey would take them when they set off. I have a friend, pastor, Charlie Baber, who does United Methodist cartoons. And he uses John and Charles Wesley, the founders of the Methodist movement, in these cartoons that he depicts. And this was a cartoon that he had for the coming new year. I'm going to read it to you in case you can't see it. But it's John and Charles are in a boat, and it's pretty rough there. And Charles says, you know, we're taking on too much water from the storms of last year, and the new year is not looking much better. And then John responds in the next with the Wesley Covenant Prayer, which we actually used in our Wednesday night service last week. But it's the Wesley Covenant Prayer. It goes, "I'm no longer my own, but thine. Put me to what thy wilt, rank me with whom thy wilt. Put me to doing, put me to suffering. Let me be employed for thee or laid aside for thee, exalted for thee or brought low for thee. Let me be full, let me be empty, let me have all things, let me have nothing. I freely and heartily yield all things to thy pleasure and disposal." In the next slide, Charles responds, "I think people were hoping their baptism would help them escape, not dive deeper, John." And John responds, "Go hard or go home, Charles." The wise men went in all the way. They were in it for the long haul. They committed, that they threw themselves into it. You know, some secondly, the wise men followed that star for 2 years. 2 years. Just imagine that. That's dedication. What about you? What is your commitment to go where Christ leads you this year? And, you know, I don't want you to miss the scandal of this story that Matthew Matthew chose to begin his gospel in this way. You know, Matthew is writing to Jewish Christians, and they would have expected the people to pay Jesus homage. If he is the king of Israel, that it would be someone that was Jewish. You know, so in Matthew's gospel, we don't see or hear about the lowly Jewish shepherds coming to see Jesus first. But still, people from far away of a different religion and a different culture are the first to come and pay him homage. And if reading this, they would be thinking, you know, what is God doing here? And so we see the fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy, your nation shall come to your light and kings to the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes all around and see, they've all gathered, they're coming to you. Your sons shall come from afar. The wealth of nations shall come to you. They shall bring gold and frankincense and shall bring good news, the praises of the Lord. This Christ is not only the King of Israel, but is the King of the nations, the King of kings. We know that Jesus would later tell his disciples, you know, go into all the world that others may come to know my story. We may even find it a bit uncomfortable, as I am sure the original readers of Matthew's gospel did, that God is at work in blessing through people of other religions. Because the wise men were committed to following the star, God used them and worked through them. Indeed, the Magi show up today as long ago. Remember the news story 2 years ago on December 22nd. A bus was traveling in the north, northeast of Kenya, and 10 Al-Shabaab militants sprayed the bus with bullets and demanded everyone to get off the bus. People knew what was going to happen because the same thing had happened the year before. When after everyone got off the bus, they separated out the Christians and the Muslims, and they killed all the Christians. But this time, that's not what happened. Instead, a group of Muslims took a stand against the gun-wielding extremists, refusing to point out who on their bus were Christians, despite the terrorists threatening to kill them all. Muslims stood on either side of the Christians to shield them from view. Passengers had swapped clothing to allow the Christians to blend in better. One man said, the militants threatened to shoot us, but still we refused and protected our brothers and sisters. Finally, they gave up and left. So God cares for and works through and shows mercy through and working in the people of other religions. And it's incredible to think about how God does that in such powerful ways. Next, know that you will find opposition to your journey. There are obstacles on the path, distractions and diversions along the way. You know, there are a lot of, we know there's a lot of bright lights in the sky. You know, you can hardly see the stars at night. Sometimes when we think about kind of the artificial lights of this world, you know, the metaphorical artificial lights, you know, sometimes it can help us, we can forget about the divine, about God in our lives, and we can end up getting off track and focus more on the human stuff than on God. The Magi knew that Jerusalem was the center of power, and they figured that that would be the right place to go in order to find this newborn king of the Jews. And this brings them to Herod. Now, Herod was about 70 years old when Jesus was born, and he was made the king of Judea by the Roman Senate. He was an insecure, paranoid megalomaniac, and he longed for power and would do anything to keep it. He didn't mind killing Jewish people. He didn't mind even killing members of his own family. He was a very sick man. And so when the wise men showed up asking, you know, where is the child that's been born the king of the Jews? It says that King Herod, he was frightened. It tells them to go and find the baby and come back and tell them where the baby is because he wanted to go out and kill the baby or the little child at that time. But the wise men were warned not to return in a dream. They didn't allow themselves to get sidetracked from their mission. They didn't fall into the lure of power and wealth. And Mary and Joseph, because of that, were able to flee to Egypt. And they were refugees there in Egypt. And which, by the way, how do you suppose they were able to sustain themselves while they were in Egypt? Yep, exactly. Yeah, and just and think about another example of how God was using the wise man for his greater plan. But when the wise men didn't come back, you know, Herod sent out his soldiers to kill the children in and around Bethlehem. They're under 2 years and under. We call this the Massacre of the Innocents. And all because Herod was frightened. You know, fear does interesting things to us. How many of you have seen the new Star Wars movie? Well, with all the Star Wars movies, it's always a story about light and darkness, about good versus evil. And one of the prequel movies, you know, we remember that Darth Vader used to be a Jedi Knight named Anakin. And Yoda is talking to Anakin, and I imagine this is kind of what's going to happen to Herod. And he says, you know, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads us to anger. Anger leads us to hate. Hate leads to suffering. So I sense much fear in you. The slaughter of the innocents, you know, happened because of fear. And there are Herods in every age. I think about the Holocaust in Rwanda, you know, Bosnia, Syria, Myanmar, you know, where we see this flight of refugees coming today. The slaughter of innocents continues. But what's even more difficult for us to resist is the realization that there's a little bit of Herod in each of us as well. When we allow fear to come over and to take control, you know, it turns us into something else. It turns, you know, and we do things that we never thought we would do. We say things sometimes we never thought we would say. You know, fear can take control of our lives. And if we don't allow love to guide us and we allow that fear to take hold, we can get off course from following the Christ child in the way of compassion and mercy and forgiveness. So we have to remember the obstacles that sometimes enter our path and how we need to remain focused on our mission. Finally, we must be willing to follow the star rather than our own assumptions, to trust God to lead us. The wise men thought the star would lead them to Jerusalem, the capital city, not to the little town of Bethlehem. And when we follow the star of Bethlehem rather than our own desires and our own comfort, you know, God leads us to where we truly sometimes need to be. You know, one morning about 6 months after Hurricane Katrina, an elderly couple was awakened by a knock on their door. It was a group of teenagers and adults carrying hammers, paintbrushes, and cleaning supplies. "Good morning," one young man said. "We're a mission team, and we're here to fix up your house. May we come in?" The man and woman looked surprised, and the strangers came in and set to work. And by the end of the day, the group had cleared out much of the debris, and the house was much more livable. The owners were just overcome with gratitude. And the woman said, "You know, you have no idea what this means to us. We've been living like this for months, and not a soul has dropped by to check on us. And we'd all but given up hope." Well, the mission volunteers were stunned by what she said because the leader began looking through his paperwork. He says, "But we couldn't have been the first ones to contact you. You know, we have a work order. People have been working with you for a while." And he looked at the paperwork again, and he had the wrong house. And sometimes when we follow God's directions, you know, we end up where we need to be. And we're led to unexpected places where we discover new epiphanies, where Christ's light can shine in new ways. And so follow your star. You know, the example of the wise men reminds us that our hopes are pinned on nothing less than the one that wise men sought after and found, and nothing less than the one from whom the heavens brought forth a new star, one of hope and promise for all of humankind. And that journey continues. The star still shines, leading us on a path into a deeper relationship with Christ. So may it be. Thanks be to God.